There's a lot of money, billions and billions of dollars spent on advertising. A lot of it goes to a small group of very large companies, and the creator economy has democratized that spend.
Hey, Keith, welcome to the show. How are you?
Good, good. Thanks for having me, Alessandra.
Absolutely, absolutely. Happy to have you here because, you know, I know that LinkedIn has been like, you know, an OG in the space of influencer marketing. So I'm pretty curious to, I know that you are a very knowledgeable guy, but before we get started, why don't you tell us a bit more about yourself? And usually we use the map, so, you know, the mission, the achievements, and the purpose to know a bit more about yourself.
Yeah, sure. And I'll kind of focus on the Linkia business side. And then if you want to go personal, I'm happy to go personal too. But from a mission perspective, you know, a lot of the mission is, especially myself, is to educate the larger brands on really how to do influencer marketing the right way when it comes to larger investments, because we're entering this phase of 6, 7, 8-figure investment levels, which is a totally different ballgame. And a lot of these brands aren't used to that, or they don't know how to spend an influencer in a way that is that level of strategy, because it is a fairly nascent industry. So a lot of my job, my role, my passion, and all the content we create and speaking engagements is really to help educate the brand market and the agency market on how do you do this.
Is there anything that either yourself or on the company side, or maybe both, that you're really proud of?
Yeah, we've done a lot in improving the value of influencers. So I think from a performance perspective and a measurement perspective, really showing companies. I had a partner a few weeks ago tell me that they've never been able to measure influencer in this way, and that's really fulfilling. So being able to measure effectively through MTA, MMM, all those trackings. We've had company milestones from a revenue perspective, from a company personnel perspective. So those are always fulfilling. But I think a lot of it, a new milestone coming up, which we'll talk about a lot more in the future, is bringing this creator and influencer content outside of social media. And so we're working on a few CTV ads for a few big partners right now. Some are going live in the coming week. So just maturation of the industry and bringing people forward. And there's been a bunch of really cool achievements along the way.
Amazing. And, you know, the last one was about the purpose. Well, why do you do what you do?
Yeah, they're very aligned. It's democratization of advertising is my personal purpose that aligned very well with the purpose of Linkia. But the idea is that there's a lot of money, billions and billions of dollars spent on advertising. A lot of it goes to a small group of very large companies. And the creator economy has democratized that spend. And we get to work with these human beings every single day who are parents, who are financial experts, who are all walks of life, who get to do what they love and make money doing what they love. And it gives them financial freedom. It gives them freedom from a 9-to-5 if that's not what they want to pursue in their life.
Before it was like just a few players, and now really you can diversify much more. So from a helicopter point of view, let's start with that. Like, you know, so you said about advertising. So let's look at the role of media and advertising in maybe the past year and then potentially 2024. And in addition to influencer marketing, right, that we're going to go more in detail in a second, but what do you think is working? Like, is a you know, a holistic approach? Are there certain channels that are bringing the most? How do you look at that?
Yeah, there's organic is an interesting world. You know, 5, 10 years ago, organic reach was way more significant than it is today. And so I think paid media is a big part of the value proposition of influencer marketing in this day and age. And paid media plays a really important role. We launched our influencer marketing report, the state of influencer marketing, a few months ago. And when we looked at media, 65% of respondents were saying they were spending at least 50% or more of their budget, their influencer budget, on the paid side of it. So if you take any given budget and you say $100,000, at least $50,000 of that $100,000 is going to paid media amplification. So how do you then design with media in mind so that it's not an afterthought, but it's a core part of an influencer campaign? And then obviously there's a question of what media. Is it paid social? Is it coming from the brand's handle? Is it coming from the creator's handle? Is it not social? Is it OLV, CTV, digital display? So there's questions in terms of what the strategy is for the brand. But I think every brand has to realize you should be doing media when you're doing these influencer campaigns, and you should have a strategy behind that media before you even start.
Yeah, I like when you said about the strategy, right? And you also said before about when it comes to 7 and 8 digits, it's so much different from a one-off activation, right? One-time activation of 5 digits, right, of a campaign. So let's dig into a bit that, you know, like, it's very interesting, I think, that, again, nowadays there is a strategy behind that, right? Before it was like, oh, yeah, you know, let's go out, let's spend some money, let's see what happens, right? No calculation about why, no analysis and everything. So first of all, How do you annually plan for especially enterprise companies, right, when it comes to the overall advertising and media strategy?
Yeah, it's a great question. Our tagline as a company is calm in the chaos. And a lot of the reason for that is there's so many platforms, there's so many tiers of creators, there's so many types of creators. So when you talk about annual planning, I think a lot of people either don't do it because they don't know how or feel very overwhelmed when they even try to do it. Basically, once you have this full view of a calendar year of everything you need as a brand from a content perspective, then you could start thinking about what are the type of creators, influencers that can help me with these content needs and how do I pulse that across a year? And what's interesting is, can I find efficiencies and can I start using creators in multiple places? Or can I maybe look at ambassador relationships where they can do things over the course of a year? So you could find these new ways of going to market, but it does start with what are my needs from a content perspective over a given year.
And, you know, something also that was interesting is about, you know, the evergreen, right, versus something that's been more specific, for instance, holidays. Are you noticing anything, you know, because you said about the calendar and everything and getting things properly, right, spread out during the year. But is like more evergreen these days when it comes to content creators or is like more on the holidays? It is a mix. So what are you seeing?
It's a mix. It's funny. At Advertising Week in New York, we did a whole session on the death of tent poles and kind of the rise of more of your evergreen content creation. I think it's a mix. Brands will never fully abandon tent poles because you need to plan, and tent poles are how you plan. It's hard to just say everything is up in the air. These are moments that are predictable that you can activate against. But I think evergreen has definitely risen in the sense that I need content that isn't necessarily specific to a period of time or a holiday, but more to what's happening in the social conversation.
Yeah, like for instance, like Black Friday, right? Just now, like I can see that there is definitely an increase in interest and everything, but sometimes I see like less companies, like, you know, really just focusing on that. The thing is because they want to use the budget for all the year. Is it because like there is too much competition happening for one day and the window is very small, or did you notice that nothing really happened and Black Friday is still a big thing?
I mean, Black Friday is still fairly big. I think these holidays are a moment where, especially from a sales and retail side, it's critically important to hit them because, I mean, as the name insinuates, that really is where they make a lot of their money, is this time of year. So I think those are still pretty critical in the plan. It's more of your planning around the MTV Music Awards and the Oscars and Valentine's Day and where you were finding things almost every month that were monthly calendar things that are becoming less relevant.
You want to see a person telling you about something and not a corporation, right? So is there any other best practices when you have to design, you know, this type of content nowadays? Is there something that is like a do in your opinion? And if so, what also are there, like, you know, do you have any other don'ts that are seen still happening maybe with big brands, you know, that they still make any mistakes?
What's interesting is organic and paid are different. The principles of what performs are slightly different. So a lot of times we do a lot in post-production where we're taking organic content, optimizing it for paid media, because things like show product in the first 3 seconds, keep captions fairly short, reference brand continuously throughout. Like, these are things that are really paid media principles versus organic. A creator can have a really long caption because their audience is actually interested in their story and they know them. So there's different principles for organic and paid. The hardest part is, I think it's a lot of creators, especially when we hear podcasts or we hear, you know, speaking on stage, the same message is, let us be us. Let us be authentic. Don't overprescribe the briefs. It is, of course, true. The caveat is that no marketer on the other side wants to do that either. It's coming from a different place. It's coming from legal compliance. It's coming from whatever it's coming from. So the nuance is, how do you let a creator do their thing but still be able to infuse all the requirements and necessities as a brand? And that mending and that line is a delicate, delicate line, but it's why you and I do what we do, right? It's the specialty is, how do you dance that line and then end up with this really great content?
Hello. Is your brand ready to amplify its reach? Well, the Influencer Marketing Factory is here to do just that. We are a global influencer marketing agency helping brands ignite their growth, from influencer identification to campaign strategy, handling legalities and agreements to managing shipping and logistics. We have it all covered. We work with hundreds of brands across different verticals, from Fortune 500 companies to DTC brands. And we don't just stop there. With detailed ROI analysis, we help brands like yours measure success, transforming impressions into actionable conversions. You can find us at theinfluencermarketingfactory.com or just search the Influencer Marketing Factory on Google.
We said difference between paid and organic, between a content creator versus a brand content. What about UGC, so user generated content, and creator generated content? Because many people say UGC also for creators, while a user can be anyone.
So, yeah.
What are also some of the differences there?
Yeah.
We've been pressing very hard this year to move away from UGC when it comes to creators. UGC has been around for decades. It's very different. These are everyday users who just create post content. As a brand, you're mostly not even paying for it. You're finding it online. You're asking for permissions of use. CGC, which is creator generated content, is kind of what we always as an industry hoped UGC was, which is just high quality UGC, but it's coordinated. It's paid for. There's negotiations. There's sometimes scripts, there's briefs. So it's a coordinated form of production. It's just much more cost efficient than hiring a creative agency or doing full scale production with a production group. So I think CGC is primarily being used by brands. And again, in that state of influencer marketing study we did earlier this year, 58% of brands are already doing this. They're already working with creators. When the creator doesn't post, they're just creating content for them.
I can see many brands buying for creator generated content. They don't care about the reach. They don't care about the distribution, or maybe they do and they want like posts, right? Many times you can see when a brand is paying for, a generic content by a creator because they are very good in quality, but still, they are still entertaining, right? Compared to maybe doing a corporate video that would be very boring. The CTR would go to 0.9, right? So I can see why that is important. And still on this, let me also ask you this. I know that this has been around for all year long, all LinkedIn, everything is about this. This fight between, content creators versus influencers. How important it is, let me rephrase, how important it is to make this decision? Do you think that we need that? Why do you think there is still this confusion when it comes to that? And do we have to still spend time on this, basically? Because it's been a year, right? So I'm curious.
It's a good question. There was a long Digiday article on this that I talked to them about this, and I had a few people texting me saying, why are we still talking about this? Why is this still a thing that we have to discuss? So here's my opinion. I have a lot of opinions on this. One, I do think there's differences between the two, and I think it's important that we understand the differences between the two. Denise Vitola Bayer, she likes to say they're fraternal twins, which I think is a clever, funny way of, it's true. They are very related and they're similar. Those of us who are really close and in the depths of this business kind of know we don't need these terms for us. But let's be honest, it's not as much for us as it is for the broader marketing and brand community who isn't nearly as close to these things as we are. What I would say is this, it's more important that we have terminology and transparency and openness with our partners about the styles of content than it is about the type of creator, influencer, person. And that's where I'm pushing, and Linky is pushing most of our partners, is to say, whenever there is a difference in outcome where the brand thought it was going to be different from a content perspective than it was, it's always because a brand thinks they're getting it all. They're getting a creator who creates trendy content, an influencer as influence, all these things. And these are different things. They're different types of people who represent different things. So the styles of content, I would argue, is more important than the type of creator. Because in this day and age, everyone's a creator, technically. Some creators have influence, some don't. But style is really important. And there's kind of three core styles that we talk a lot about. One is production replacement. That's more of your CGC. I'm doing it because I want ad-like high-quality content, but I don't want to pay a creative agency or full-scale production company because I don't feel I need to and I need a ton of it. So there's production quality, production replacement. There's more social trendy, which kind of is short-form video, your Reels, your TikToks. This is text overlays, quick cuts, personality kind of comes through the screen, and there's people who are really good at that. And then there is more of the influential content, which is I need a nutritionist or a doctor or a financial expert or a parenting enthusiast or a fitness expert. And they might not have this cool, trendy content, but I need them. I need their legitimacy. I need their reach, their audience. And so these are different styles. And that's almost more testimonial. They're speaking to your product. They're convincing people of your product. So those are the styles. And it's really important that we do have an understanding of what style somebody is after, because I don't know how you hit a bullseye if you don't even know where you're aiming at. And so the creator influencer conversation, I think, is less important in the context of esoterically what's the difference. it's important the context of what's the output of the content style that these people are producing. And I think it's more of a symbol for that than it is a discussion about like.
So I asked you many things, but I wanted to know from you, is there anything else that excites you lately in the influencer marketing / creator economy, or even a broader media advertising? Is something that you're following closely that you're really like, oh, wow, that is going to be the next big thing?
Yeah, we talked a little bit about it. I think there's a few things. One is definitely the idea of social content leaving the walls of social media. I really do think every TV ad we watch in 2024 and 2025 is going to start to look like a social media ad, and it's going to start looking like TikTok and Reels content. So I think the proliferation of social content outside of social is really, really exciting. You're going to see digital out-of-home ads as you walk down the street that look like TikTok videos. So it's really cool. I think that's an amazing trend, and I'm excited about that, very excited about that. The other one is commerce. I do think we're starting to move on our path in the US towards the path that China's been on. I think TikTok's done a pretty good job of that, and they've bet really big in this space. The Amazon news with Meta and Snap, I thought was a really interesting way to start ending this year of Meta was pretty silent on commerce, if anything, going the other direction. And then, bam, they drop an Amazon bomb of you can now shop Amazon through their platform.
And when it comes to especially commerce, it's something that I'm very interested in as well. What do you think is missing? Is it on the tech side, like component? Is it about the, you know, we run this like report about social commerce, and still a lot of people, they don't trust either the sellers, because there's still a lot of cheap sellers, right? On especially on TikTok Shop. Or sometimes they don't trust the platform with their information. So in your opinion, like why for the US and also Europe is taking much longer compared to, let's say, China when it comes to the real social commerce? So buying something inside the app without leaving it.
I guess there's two things. One is I do think it's a trust and it's an experience thing. So if you payments, logistics and deliveries, returns, huge things here. If I have to put my credit card into a new platform, there's high skepticism here versus other places of doing that. That's why I thought the Amazon move from Meta was so genius. So I think there's the credit card thing. And I think when you order something, if you have a bad experience from a delivery or a returns perspective, and we're so used to two-day Amazon Prime delivery, easy returns anywhere, if you don't get that, you're less inclined to order again. So that's why I thought TikTok, I actually thought they went early to become a retailer. I think they could have gotten an Amazon, a Walmart, maybe even more on board first, start getting users to buy using their existing logins and credit card and the way that Amazon's doing with Meta, and then move to TikTok. You're seeing even on TikTok, I don't know how you feel, my experience on the app has changed a lot in the last month, and not for the better as a user. There's a lot of shop content. It seems like a lot of knockoff and low cost and just products that don't create a premium experience. And so that is that dichotomy. What I think TikTok has done brilliantly, though, is to your other point, is make it less reliant on checking out in the platform immediately to show the value of your impact on conversion. TikTok introduced a whole new attribution system a couple months ago. They did something last week that was more engagement-driven. There's a new metric you can look at that is engagement to conversion. So they have a whole click. They have now an engagement to conversion. So they're doing also a good job of saying, we understand our impact on purchase intent, even beyond immediate attribution, is very high. So social commerce, I think in the future, doesn't have to be I buy on TikTok. I think it could be I buy on Amazon, but the connection from me learning about it on TikTok is now actually trackable and really clear. And that is still considered, in my opinion, social commerce, because that is what drove the commerce.
Wow. No, very interesting. Yeah, I could continue talking about these for hours with you, to be honest. I'm very passionate about it as well. And I think that even the technology side, the ROI analysis, everything is slowly getting there. But I'm also very curious about the overall user experience, because on the short term, yes, you can get like a lot of sales and sales and everything, but on the long term, like what is the perception, right, of the app? Is it going to be again only knockoffs products, I'm quite curious to see what is going to happen there.
I was going to say the biggest advertisers in the world sell products that are not immediate. You don't buy them in a TikTok session. You're not going to buy yogurt. You're not going to buy milk. You're not going to buy bread. You're not going to buy cheese. Like you're not going to check out on a one off on TikTok. So you also have to think about these biggest advertisers. They're trying to inform and influence purchase intent, but not necessarily drive a purchase in the same shopping experience when you're in the social platform. So that's the whole world of checkout, of carding, of all that stuff. So even what TikTok is doing, you're still a huge population of the advertising spend. The biggest spenders still have to treat commerce very differently.
Yeah, no, I can see that. I think they were still really at the beginning of all these, right? So I'm quite curious to see what is going to happen. And yeah, there is a lot to talk about for sure. And again, you know, I would love to do an episode only about that. And who knows, maybe later on we're going to only dedicate one about, you know, commerce. But I wanted to thank you, Keith, for being with me today and, you know, sharing all your knowledge with us.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
This was the Influence Factor by the Influencer Marketing Factory. And I'll see you next week.